Number of you are asking, when do we get to the positive things? And we will, but it seems to me absolutely essential that we get a real grasp of the nature and the power of this movement. And this is what I'd like to do in this particular lecture. I believe we're moving into, oddly enough, what's being called the post-secular age. Not the post-Christian, but the post-secular age. Now, the question is, how has this all developed? Where have all the flower power people gone? Why don't we use the term New Age anymore? And I suggest that you don't, otherwise you will be totally uncool. Because the progressives have ditched this term because, of course, it was so focused on the individual. And now we're seeing a sophistication of this pagan view beyond individual enlightenment and experience of the divine within, and reaching for a much larger sense of the importance of this worldview, a much more full-orbed view. You remember this vision of a new humanism, and June Singer, whom I've cited a number of times, said this: what lies in store, and she said this in the 70s, as we move towards the longed-for conjunction of the opposite. There it is again, the conjunctio oppositorum, the joining of the opposites. The question is, can the human psyche realize its own creative potential through the building of its own cosmology and supplying it with its own gods? In other words, there is now a desire to develop a worldview. That's what cosmology means. According to Mary Evelyn Tucker, a disciple of Thomas Berry, whom I mentioned yesterday, who actually is one of the people on the committee for writing the Earth Charter, which is a UN document that will determine what we do in the future, and that has been written. She said, the solution to our problems lies in the development of a new cosmology. So these folks that call themselves spiritual progressives are now trying to envisage a whole-scale worldview to go with that. And it's no longer just focused on the self. And that's, I believe, what Thomas Berry meant when he talked about the great work, our way into the future, which is, of course, the future where we worship Mother Earth. So this is where I believe this New Age movement is going. It has actually gone mainstream, so that you don't need to use the term New Age anymore. People are spiritual now. But it's also, as I said, morphing into a really determined way of explaining the whole of reality through this prism. What's odd is, when I came to the States, I saw this amazing Christian culture, and now America has become the incubator and promoter of a profoundly different kind of message. How odd. I find this extremely odd. This is why when I came to the States in 91, I was so much in culture shock and so motivated to try and understand what was going on. Tony Schwartz, who was a journalist, studied in the 90s this whole spiritual movement, and at the end of his book, What Really Matters, which he wrote in 1995 actually, he says that he discovered as he went around interviewing all these new spiritual people, he discovered, quote, an emerging American wisdom tradition that will save humanity. So this is an American tradition. Now, the seduction of a pagan worldview is not new. Cultural Observer remarked about ancient pagan Babylon. The Babylonians made pagan religions fashionable. They incorporated art, drama, and music into religion until the pagan ideas were attractively represented as the highest expressions of their culture. We have heard often of the glory of Imperial Rome. There is a certain attractiveness to the pagan worldview. So it's not a question just of individuals having experiences of themselves as divine, but individuals now attempting to rethink the whole of reality for the sake of the planet. I saw this, first of all, in Technicolor, obviously in California, and especially in Berkeley. You all got that. Where my son and daughter-in-law graduated, so I have the right to say this. I saw an advert for a conference with this title, Transforming Worldviews for the Planetary Era. Now, we were right in the middle of postmodern deconstruction, which says, from now on, there will be no worldviews. So I thought, wait a minute, how can these people talk about worldview? Transforming Worldviews for the Planetary Era. It turned out to be a meeting of about 400 intellectual pagans celebrating the work of Thomas Berry, whom you've heard me talk about, many of his disciples. And, of course, one of them, as I mentioned, was part of the drafting committee of the Earth Charter. So you see a group of very powerful people, well-situated in these high echelons of global power, who and now are thinking about turning their individual experience into a worldview for everybody. So that was in 2000. In 2011, I signed up for a webinar and was intrigued by this title, Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. There again, you see, you go beyond the New Age, which is the awakening, the personal awakening, to try to envisage what will now happen beyond the New Age. And this webinar was hailed as the most important conversation for the planet today, and many of the old lions of the New Age were being interviewed as to what they thought about their original experience and where we needed to go. So this was most intriguing to listen to these people. Such visionaries are promoting their view of the future in many important global centers of power. They're very active in the World Economic Forum, for instance, in Davos, Switzerland. I've mentioned the place they have at the United Nations and in UNICEF. They call themselves, and here's where I can help you be not uncool. Is that right? This is what they now call themselves. They call themselves cultural creatives, or progressives, or brights, or integral spiritualists. They claim to represent 50 million North Americans. And they also claim, as I was listening to this webinar, that there are 80 to 90 million Europeans that are of the same opinion, and that they plan to take over, ideologically, they plan to take over America by 2020. I'm not inventing this. This is what I heard them say on this webinar. And of course, to get a sense of the importance of this movement, we've not counted the kids. Why do I say that? A book was published in 2007 by Paul Hawken called Blessed Unrest, where he presented what's going on in the world through the environmental program. And he argues that there are between 1 and 2 million environmental organizations constituting, quote, the largest social movement in all of human history. Now, there's nothing wrong with the environment and being concerned about it, but this man, showing how much young people are attracted and seduced by this vision of saving the planet, and rightly so, but this man, Hawken, shows that it is motivated by a certain kind of spirituality, which is the key issue that we need to define. It's not just any spirituality, and here's how he describes it. It is indigenous culture and native spiritual practices plus Buddhist ideas that eliminate the concept of an external divine authority and rigid categories. Did you follow that? In other words, Native American spirituality plus Eastern mysticism all rolled together to get rid of the notion of God as an external authority. And this vision is being introduced on many campuses via the notion of sustainability. And of course, it's not just environmental sustainability either. It's that we all need to be one and include everybody, and then we can sustain ourselves. So all the radical sexual agendas are included in the notion of sustainability. How interesting. And there is, in fact, a White House initiative called the Interfaith Youth Core, which asks, what if campuses led the movement for interfaith cooperation? You see, this becomes the cutting edge for the kids. It's to adopt this notion of planetary salvation via interfaith thinking. Now, is this just my idea? I always like to find scholars who agree with me because I'm afraid of my own ideas. And I found an article by a non-religious sociologist by the name of Ernest Sternberg, with the title, Purifying the World, What the New Radical Ideology Stands For. He is a specialist in urban planning at the University of Buffalo. And he identifies a powerful group of people, and it's a wonderful title, whom he names world purificationists. Isn't that an interesting term? This is a secular man. He's not at all religious. But he looks at this progressive movement and calls it world purificationism. He examines the sociological and political aspects of what he sees as a powerful world-transforming movement. Here's what he says. We are in the midst of a worldwide rise of a, well, this is his view, of a non-religious apocalyptic movement preaching global human renewal and predicting apocalypse as its woeful alternative. In other words, if we don't follow the movement, the whole will implode. According to Sternberg, this world purificationism is made up by a vast alliance of social movements that look for a new era of social justice. It includes all the modern notions of civil rights and a sustainable development in which it is believed all diverse cultures will meet in harmony on the earth. There is one enemy, and it's the past Western civilization. He doesn't use the term, but it's obviously the past Christendom that is identified as the enemy. Now, I'm impressed by this support of what I'm saying because it doesn't come from some kind of right-wing sensationalist, but a very careful intellectual sociologist who sees this massive movement taking shape. But actually, I feel like he fails to see the real power of the movement by not seeing two things, the spirituality of this movement and its view of sexuality. The two most important factors, I think, that motivate the human being, he doesn't see. But when you add those two elements, you begin to understand how powerful this movement is. So the notion of spirituality as an empowering factor in this utopian vision of the future must not be underestimated, nor the incredible passion that is evoked by notions of sexual liberation. Many of those people are at the forefront of this revolutionary movement. So here it is, I believe, we're on the verge of seeing people like this want to take power in whatever ways they can. And sort of as a crowning of this movement, sorry if I'm even more discouraging you, but we're going to hang in there because we have to understand it. As a crowning element in this movement is the emergence of a term that I had never seen until a year or so ago, namely the term the post-secular age. I didn't say the post-Christian age, which you mostly hear, by the way. We're in a post-Christian age, which sounds like secular humanism is one, right? The post-Christian age is the result of the attacks of secular humanism on the Christian faith. But now we're in a period called the post-secular age, which means, really, that secularism is post, is gone. So what will take its place? In particular, a British intellectual, Mike King, a research fellow at London Metropolitan University, published a book, let's see, in 2009, entitled Post-Secularism, the Hidden Challenge to Extremism. And what he means by that is that this is a very balanced movement. It's not an extremist movement. It rejects two ways of thinking that we've seen in the past. One is the Christian faith, that's extremist, and the other is atheism, that's extremist too. So intellectuals are invited now to join this wonderfully balanced view of things, where you can actually be an intellectual and be spiritual at the same time. I think that's somewhat like the future we're looking at. Not that the spiritualists are these weird groups at the edges of society belonging to these strange cults like the Hermetic Order and, you know, some of the stuff we talked about yesterday, but actually that this is how intellectuals must think about existence from now on. And according to Mike King, this post-secular view has religious sensibilities because it is supported by four fundamental pillars. The first one is it's supported by the new psychology. You've guessed it, the psychology of Jung. Jung is taken as the model of the intellectual, the scientist, who actually was able to penetrate into the mysteries of the spiritual. And so his work is held up as a model of scientific research in the future. And Stanislav Grof, who is the inheritor of Jung's approach, a quintessential post-secularist who journeyed from atheism, scientism, and Marxism, and Freudism into the spirituality that he found in Carl Jung. Carl Jung then becomes the model. And we see here perhaps some of the contours of this new human embracing the occult as a scientific truth. You get that? The occult can be defended now by intellectual scientific inquiry. You remember what I cited about Jung, that he himself agreed that his work was really extra scientific, that did not allow for scientific proof. It was beyond science. But what he learned in his room, in his meeting with Philemon, this deep occultic experience, was the most, I'll quote him, the most important time of my life. Everything later was merely outer classification. So here we have Jung, you see, functioning now as the model of the intellectual of the future. Spirituality has become absolutely essential, you see. Secular humanism has let us all down. So we're rejecting that extreme position. But then the other extreme position of Christianity must go. So here you find yourself in the middle, you see, with an intelligent way of taking on the future and its spiritual aspects. Then the new science is evoked, quantum physics, with its notion of the subatomic world of quantum indeterminacy, is suggesting this kind of oneness spirituality. Transhumanism, which is now being proposed as the next phase of evolution, where we move from the human to the transhuman with the aid of the machine, which really is man saving man, which is a perfectly oneist solution. King also talks about the recovered nature spirituality, that we scientists need to see that nature is really spiritual, that Mother Earth is alive and well. And then modern feminism, which has discovered that the goddess was the one in power at the time of the Bible, and this puts an end to the patriarchal god Yahweh and leaves him a place of relative unimportance. And so this post-secular age, you see, is now excited about the future in terms of what it will bring to intellectuals who want to be spiritual. I mentioned Richard Tarnas, a brilliant pagan philosopher who wrote the book The Passion of the Western Mind. And he believes we have reached a pivotal breaking point. The future of the human spirit now hangs in the balance. And he believes that the human story is culminating in a great synthesis, bringing the two tendencies of Western history, the autonomous mind of the scientist, and the wild spirit of the romantics. He calls them romantics. We would call them occultists. And here's what he says. It's a big, thick book. It's actually read in most of the philosophy departments in America, as a matter of fact. This is a thoroughgoing man committed to the occult. But he's so brilliant that his work is indeed read everywhere. And here's the interesting statement. At the end of this, I think it's 500 pages, the deepest passion of the Western mind, and he'd gone through the whole history of the West, has been to reunite with the ground of its being, that is, Mother Nature. So this long process of the Western mind and its affirmation of its autonomy now unites with Mother Nature, nature as divine. So this is the ultimate union of the rational with the mythical, the normal with the paranormal, the material with the immaterial, the divine with the human. The CEO and chairman of Apple Computer, John Sculley, believes that Tarnas' work is powerful and will serve us well into the next millennium. So you see, these folks are enthused by this. And it's coming about because atheism and this new spirituality really share some fundamental things together. We shouldn't be surprised. I end with this sad statement that I read in the Daily Telegraph in 2012. Britain will miss Christianity when it's gone. So will America.